Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yud Aleph, and we got up to the Halakha Mishnah. And we're continuing on with what type of activities are acceptable on Shabbat, even though they may affect a cure. But as we said, the only time that affecting a cure was Osir min Rabbanan, because of the Gezer of Shechikat Samamanim, is where it's Mukha Milta, where it's clear-cut, that is the purpose of what you're doing. The general rule had been so far that anything that would have been done possibly by a regular person, even though it's sort of unlikely because it has bad side effects and so on, you would be allowed to do even though it's curative in your mind, and that's the purpose of it. So the Mishnah today has some further illustrations, not even of the type of foods, but as we're going to see, it has to do also with the way in which it's done. So let's say somebody has got a toothache. Now, if choshesh b'shinav and the gums are inflamed and so on, what he would normally do during the week maybe is he would gargle with vinegar and something like that. But on Shabbos, he should not do that. Lo yigamea behem et achometz, avo metavelu kedarko. So he shouldn't sip vinegar through his teeth, sort of to get the vinegar into the gums. Don't do that. But what you could do, actually, is you could eat a salad. You put a lot of vinegar in the salad, and then you could just eat the salad because that's the normal way that you would eat. And that way, you'll be getting lots of vinegar. Now, im nitrape, nitrape, that's fine. But as long as it's not clear that that's what you're doing. Let's say that you've got pain in your side, or choshesh b'mot nav, so you have a bad backache or something. Lo yosuch yayin v'chometz. So don't rub wine or vinegar, but you can use oil, because regular people use oil all the time. It's part of the skin emollient and so on. Avosachu et hashemen. Except don't use rose oil, because that's very expensive, and nobody would be using rose oil just for the joy of the rose oil. It must be that he's using it for medication, for which people pay a lot of money, and it would be, again, mukha milta. However, for the kind of people, such as royalty, b'nei melachim, well, they could use shemen vered even on a wound on Shabbos, because even during the normal week, when things were just they wanted a little bit of emollient, they would use it also, even though it's very expensive. Rabbi Shimon says there's no such thing. If it's mutter for B'nai Malachim, then it's mutter for everybody. We don't make distinctions. And Kol Yisrael B'nai Malachim, you want to act like a Ben Melech? What's wrong with that? That's fine too. We'll see what the issue is here in the Gemara. Rami le'revacha arichad u'revacha bar papa le'rebi abahu. So the tall Rav Acha, and that is Rav Acha bar Papa, and as opposed to the short Rav Acha, it's interesting that when I was in yeshiva, so Rav Noach, who was still a bocher in the yeshiva, was there together with a cousin who was also called Noach. Both of them were Noach Weinbergs, but Rav Noach was tall, and the other one was short, so that's what they would call them. They'd call them Big Noach and Little Noach in those days. So the same thing over here. So the yeshiva, they call him Rav Acha Richa to distinguish him from the other Rav Acha. So Tznan, we learn in the Mishnah, Choshesh B'shinav, so somebody who's got this toothache, he should not be Megamea et HaChometz. Now that seems to imply very clearly that Chometz is good for your teeth. But that's crazy. The Pasuk says exactly the opposite. V'aktiv doesn't say in Mishlei, Kachometz l'shinayim, it's like vinegar to your teeth. Ah! Ukesha ashan le'inayim, or like smoke gets in your eyes. And that certainly is not something that's good for your teeth, or good for your eyes, right? So I understand, how's the Mishnah assuming the exact opposite of the Pasuk? Says the Gemara, wait, there's different types of chometz that we're talking about over here. I mean, what we're referring to in the Pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech says that it's like chometz l'shinayim. Chometz l'shinayim is talking about the sharpness of the fruit itself that has never matured, not to the fact that something has continued the process of fermentation. That's a completely different taste. But where you're tasting a very, very, sour fruit. sour fruits, if the grapes themselves are soured and haven't ripened, that's a completely different feeling, and that, in fact, sets your teeth on edge. Ooh. And that's what he's referring to. Ashenka, the Mishnah is referring to vinegar. Or you could say, it could be that even the Pasuk is referring to vinegar. And the difference is that the Mishnah is talking about where there's a gum bleeding and stuff like that. So over there, there's obviously an advantage to the vinegar, and it feels good to be feeling the healing process on your gums. But Hadaleka Maka, the Pasuk is referring to stam, drinking vinegar. And that's really what's also will be like something that is not very good for your teeth, because if you have a maca, so then the vinegar helps. But if there's no maca, what happens is when you're drinking the vinegar, it actually causes the gum to withdraw. And because of that, in the end, it's going to damage your teeth. Maybe that's what it means, kechomets l'shinayim, not the way that it tastes to you. Anyway, the Mishnah says, don't be megamea, which implies that you can't sip vinegar on Shabbos, if you got a toothache. Now, the problem is that the Braita says that's not true. The Braita says you can't gargle with it. So, lo yigam mavu polate. You can't take vinegar into your mouth and then spit it out. Because then it's clear that the what you were doing for medicine. But you could certainly, if you want to drink, you can drink. You could be megamea vibolea, because there are people who will sip vinegar at Bichlal. I don't know. There's lots of these health beliefs. So lots of people will drink vinegar. Look, if you could drink urine, you could certainly drink vinegar, right? So mashma, that the Mishnah is saying that you can't even drink it. Omer Abaye, actually, the Mishnah doesn't mean that. The Mishnah is referring to gargling. So it's talking about megamea vipolate. And the reason that, of course, the obvious question is, so then if that's the case, why did the Mishnah contrast what you're not allowed to do to what you are allowed to do by saying, but you could put a lot of vinegar in your salad and eat the salad? I mean, the Mishnah should have just said, as long as you don't spit it out, right? I mean, it's a funny way to contrast it. Tosis is bothered by this. It's an obvious question. And he says that, look, I mean, you're going to have to say that the only reason that the Mishnah uses that case is because it would be the more natural way of dealing with it than actually drinking raw vinegar. So, okay, so you want to get vinegar into your mouth, then you would just make a very strong vinaigrette. So that's what our Mishnah is referring to. Rava says, no. The Mishnah may, in fact, hold that we're talking about even if you swallow. But the issue would be the timing. And the timing may be crucial in seeing whether it's mukha milta. Is it obvious that you're doing it for medicine, or might it just be something that you're doing because you want to take a drink? Because, look, you could say that the Braita that says you're allowed to drink it as long as you don't spit it out, that's talking about before you had your meal. So over there, okay, so people in general, they're hungry and they're, you know, they're taking a little bit of stuff here and there. So kan lifnei tibul v'kan le'achra tibul. So actually, it depends. If it was after the meals, everybody say, well, what's this guy doing? He must have a toothache from getting a piece of meat stuck between his teeth or whatever. So because of that, it would be awesome. No. Rava can't mean that. This is terrible. Rava is the shita that holds that we never prohibit something in one circumstance that would be mutter in another circumstance. That's called ho'il. It's a very common concept in the Masechet Beitzah. We're over there, once we're matir something, in particular circumstances, let's say what would be letzorech, we're matired even shelo letzorech, and that extends bichlal to the dinim of Isurin. Over there, by the way, the case was, it was talking about the question of whether you're allowed to go to the mikveh. That was talking about on Yom Kippur, and on Shabbos, and on Tisha B'Av, if the point is for Tahira. So you needed to go to the mikveh. So Rav over there said that because of the fact that people will just say, look, you're going in there to cool off, you would do that at any time, so it would be mutter. So they ask, because otherwise it would be mashma that it would be similar to Tikkun Kli, because it's Tikkun Gavri, you're not allowed to fix a Kli, so you're not allowed to fix yourself to make yourself kosher butter for Achilas Truma, and so on. So the Gemara asks, that's all very sweet, but what does that have to do with Yom Kippur? I mean, nobody's gonna say anything about Yom Kippur where you went in there to cool off or to take just a brief wash. You're not allowed to do that on Yom Kippur. So why are we matter on Yom Kippur? So over there, Rav is the one who says, a Svara of Hoyo, that it does not make sense once we're matter things generally. So we give a general heter of going to the mikvah on Shabbos, we're not going to create an Issa D'Rabbanan, and once something is mutter on Shabbos, that, well, on Yom Kippur, it's Aser. Mitam the Tikkun Kli, so to speak. So if that's Rav Ashita, then Neima Midlifnei Tibul Shori, then Lacher Tibul Shori. Then you can't say something at 5:30 in the afternoon is mutter, but at 6 o'clock is Aser. And that's basically what you're saying. The Shamina Leila Rava, the Itlei Ho'il. We know that Rava holds this concept of Ho'il, meaning that once we are matir something in similar circumstances, then just because the circumstances change a little, we're not going to aser it. And that was even a Ho'il in terms of Shabbos Yom Kippur, because Rabbi Rava was the one who said over there, like a minute of Shabbos Shari. There's nothing that we would be matir on Shabbos that we would aser on Yom Kippur. Instead, we would say Ho'il. Ho'il de b'Shabbat Shari, b'Yom HaKippurim Nami Shari. So over here we should say, Ho'il the mutter lifnei tibul, it's mutter li'achar tibul. I mean, that certainly is less of a Ho'il than the difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, for heaven's sakes. Says the Gemara, you are absolutely right. And the fact is that once Rava accepted the idea of Ho'il, then he absolutely had charata from the answer that he just offered. The difference between before dinner and after dinner, sipping of vinegar, he changed his mind about that as soon as he understood the Ho'il. Wait a minute, I mean, how do you know which one he changed his mind about? I mean, obviously he changed his mind about one or the other, maybe he changed his mind about Ho'il. So maybe he was dealing with the other way. No. There's no way out of the other one. Absolutely no way out. Look, he couldn't have said that Tvila is Osir on Yom Kippur and changed his mind about Ho'il, because, I mean, it says in the Brayta, Kol Chayve Tvilot of Lint Kedarkan, it says, Beferish Bein Betishabov, Bein Biyom HaKippurim. If you need to do a Tvila Bismana, then you're allowed to do this on Yom Kippur. So why? Why didn't the Rabbanan answer it in terms of Tikkun Mana? The Tikkun Adam is similar to Tikkun Mana. So obviously it must be because of Ho'il. Therefore, it's unlikely that he changed his mind. By the way, Tosis points out, I mean, if you're holding in that sugya over there, that there were numerous other explanations, alternative explanations to Ho'il. So, I mean, maybe Rav adopted one of those other explanations. I mean, why do you have to say that, that he would never have changed his mind about Ho'il and therefore must be changed his mind here. Okay, but that's beyond our dealing with here locally. Next, the Mishnah says, if you got pain in your sides, in Bemotnav, so then the question was whether you're allowed to use just regular olive oil, or could you even use this very expensive stuff, which is rose oil, which according to Rabbi Shimon, we said, Kol Yisrael b'nei melochem, and why not go to town? So, Omer Baba Bar Zavda, Omer Rav, well, that's how we paskin. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Anybody can use even Shemen Vradim. Wait a minute. That would imply that Rabbi Shimon, Rav, goes according to Rabbi Shimon's kulas on Shabbos? I mean, L'chora, this is a big machlokas here, Rishonim, why the Gemara is making this assumption. But somehow or other, as Rashi seems to understand it, that the reason that Rav would have paskin like Rabbi Shimon, L'kula over here, is because he, like, remember we saw Kol Milei de Rav Ovid, right? So the question was, does he follow a general path? So Rav was following the general path of kulas of Rabbi Shimon. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done so. But that's not true, because Amar Rav Shimon bar Chiya Mishmei de Rav, we have a classic case where it appears that Rav, like, violates going Alibet Rabbi Shimon, because, I mean, the main point of Rabbi Shimon throughout Shabbos is about a Dover Shem Miskaven, right? So, a Malacha that, according, I mean, so many times, this happens 100 times in Shabbos, we have a Dover Shem Miskaven, and that Rabbi Shimon hold is Mutter, then how do you explain the fact that Rav Shimi bar Chiya quotes Rav as saying that this Mesuchrayat and Azaita, a Mesuchrayat and Azaita is a very common thing. Basically, when you're screwing in or forcing in something that has got a hold in liquid, the case of the Nezaita is that it's actually a faucet. Now, as you know, when you try to screw in a faucet, you better have either some type of Teflon tape or something like that to prevent leaking from around the places where it's not 100% tight, right? Now, obviously, when you've got a wine barrel, where it's made out of porcelain, I mean, it's not going to be a perfectly shaped kind of hole. And the metal faucet that you're sticking in there to allow the wine out is certainly not going to be perfectly shaped for it. So what you would do is you would simply take a piece of cloth, wrap it around it, and stuff it in, and that would put it in like very tight and would prevent liquid from coming out. But it's usher to put that in, because when you do that, you would be squeezing any liquid that was in there, because the liquid immediately, it's exposed to the wine inside. And when you push it in tight, you squeeze it out. And so Mamela, either you'll be over on Dash, you'll be over Malabane. This is a whole big question, because is there really an Isser Malabane on something that is in water? I mean, you're not going to wash your clothes in wine. These are things we're going to discuss later on. But certainly squeezing one way or the other would have been Usher over here. Now, my intent is absolutely not to squeeze. All I'm trying to do is to fit in the faucet tightly, right? And nonetheless, Rav says you're not allowed to do that. And even though it is certainly a Davosheni Miskaven, so apparently he does not go a Liba to Rabbi Shimon in Rabbi Shimon's Kulas. No, says Gemara, come on. Now, over there, even Rabbi Shimon is Maida. Because remember, as we've had so many times, that by a Varavad Amrit Arvayu, even Rabbi Shimon is Maida in the case of a Psik Reisha Velo Yamut. And since over here, this is a Psik Reisha, how are you going to squeeze in the cloth, which is wet, without automatically squeezing out some of the liquid in the cloth? So there we're Maida. Anyway, says the Gemara, okay, you want me to prove 100% that he does not go according to the Kulas of Rabbi Shimon? What about this? How about that, huh? That the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda by Malacha Shena, by a Malacha, which is an Enem Miskavin. And Rabbi Chana Bar Ami Omer Shmuel says, actually, halacha is Rabbi Shimon by an Enem Miskavin. And Rabbi Chia Bar Avin actually says that in their own, not quoted by other people. He said it below Gavre. It's direct Machlokas. Rav Amar, halacha Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel Amar, halacha Rabbi Shimon. So what are you telling me, that he's going to be maker like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to the Shemen Vradim? Elo Amar Rava, actually. What Rava explained was that I am the lion of this group, of my Chabura. Who's that? That's Rabbi Chia Bar Avin. We explained that when Rav Paskin over here, like Rabbi Shimon, he was Paskining. Now, Calvin, please don't be upset about that. So he was Paskining like Rabbi Shimon, but Lav Mitaime, he was not Paskining like the reason of Rabbi Shimon. And, okay, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, I'll explain to you. Look, the halacha is you can use the rose oil, okay? But not because of what he says, that, well, it's okay, because since anyway, Kol B'nai Yisrael are considered to be B'nai Malachim, you know, that's not the point. The point is that rose oil is not useful for curative effects. It's only useful for giving you a good feeling as an emollient. And therefore, why would it be usher? Rabbi Shimon has to come onto this far because Rabbi Shimon suffer masse. He holds that it's a healing thing, but Rav suffer lo masse. So Bechlal, it's not even a problem. Oh, come on. What do you mean Rav suffer lo masse? It says Beferish in the Mishnah. B'nei melachim sachin agabi makoteim shemen vered. Okay. I mean, so what are we talking about over here? They're putting it on for playing tiddlywinks. I mean, obviously the whole point over there is Bechlal de masse. I mean, what else is the Mishnah saying? Why would it say that you can use it on Shabbos if you're B'nai Malachim, if it doesn't do anything? That's ridiculous. No, what Rava must have meant when he says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that Rav was saying halacha Rabbi Shimon v'lo mitaime, it was that, yes, the halacha is that it's mutter, like Rabbi Shimon, but not because of Yisroel or B'nai Malachim, but rather because the Rabbi Shimon savar. Look, Rabbi Shimon's whole approach is that look, even though over here in this location, this stuff is very expensive And nobody would use it unless, like, they're multimillionaires or B'nai Malachim. Nobody would use this kind of stuff as just a skin emollient unless they're using it for a refuah. And because of that, the Tanakhama holds that it's aser. And Rabbi Shimon says, even so, let's say that it would be mukha milta, but it's not mukha milta for royalty. We don't make those kind of distinction. Then it's not mukha milta, then it's not considered to be aser for anybody. So Rav says, look, that I don't agree with, but I hold that it is a function of the locale, that the Rabbana would be made at, that if it's something that's sold, you know, same price as olive oil or whatever, twice the price. So then if it was bishchiach, then you would be allowed to use it by anybody. If it's not shchiach, then not. Now it happens to be that around Rav's location, ba'atar de Rav, shchiach mashka de Varda. It actually was something that was very common, and there was no problem in Rav's place, and that's why he said Alokhik Rabbi Shimon, meaning locally you can follow the approach of Rabbi Shimon. That's all that he meant to say, but the circumstances were totally different. La Capitan, please get ready. We got the big moment coming, and Doc, stuff up your ears. You're going to be listening to Yiddish you won't like, and here we go. Hadron Alok Shemoyna Shuratzim. Oh, notice that the gabbai of the Rebbe Shlita seems to have hidden his face too. I don't know, Rich. Maybe you should do a little bit of a Yiddish course. Maybe the Rebbe would be willing to give you some lessons over here. If you want to have a Hasidic pronunciation anyway. Okay, thank you. Beautiful. The Elu Kisharim Shechayavin Alehem. So we're up to, we finished the part about weaving the curtains for the Mishkan, trapping the animals to make the upper oil on the Mishkan, and sewing them, because we needed to sew it together. But, of course, that led us into the question of tying the threads, as we saw before, so that we may have a problem. We need to be matir in order to be kosher. And that we had spoke about before. Where was that in the Mishkan? We spoke about the chilazon trappers as one example. So they would need to undo the nets and adjust the sizes of the nets in order to catch the chilazons. And also people that would be sewing the curtains of the Mishkan. If they happen to have pulled too tightly on the sewing, you have to open it up and then you have to re-sew it. Okay. In any event, our next issue is tying the knot. And so we begin with an understanding of what the requirement would be to call something a knot of Isser. Now, obviously, one of the first things that strikes us is that the knots that we're talking about in the case of the Mishkan were essentially solidly tied knots that are meant to stay there. They're permanent knots. I mean, they may not be meant to stay there forever because you may have to adjust them and undo the net and make the net larger or whatever. But that's called permanent. They're not tied in order to release them. And so the Mishnah is going to give us some examples of different types of knots, which we're going to get into in the Gemara, and what exactly would be the definitive elements of knots that are usher, knots that are usher only min rabbanan, but not chayev, and knots that are even mutter lechatchila. So the Mishnah begins with the discussion of the ones that you're chayev on, and there'll be the next Mishnah which will discuss the ones that you're putter on, and that this was a common here in the Masechet. So elu kisharim shechayavim aleihem. So the following knots would be actually chayev d'oraisa. Kesher hajamalim, kesher hasapanim. So you've got the camel drivers, you've got the sailors. Those are the kind of knots that are used permanently. For permanents, they will see exactly which knots it's referring to. Uchashem shu chayav al kishuran, kachu chayav al heteran. Actually, the two issues of kosher umatir are interrelated because the types of knots that the Torah asserted in heter were the types of knots that you initially had tied in order for them to be permanent. And so one will be the same definition as for the other. Rabbi Meir Omer, look, the point is that if you can untie a knot with one hand so that it isn't really tight, then by definition you will not be chayev on that knot because it wouldn't matter, even if the guy who tied it had in mind that it would stay that way, says Rashi, the knot has to be tight. So that is certainly a fundamental definition of a permanent knot, is that it's tight. It may be dependent in your actual kavon at the time as well. Is this the knot that is meant to remain there permanently or not? But at least it has to be tight. Anyway, when we talk about the Kesher HaJamalim or the Kesher HaSapanim in the Mishnah, we need to think about the way that these knots would be made, because it could be referring to two different things. Both cases that we're using, the Gamal and the Sapan, really have two completely different types of knots. Now, one of the knot would be, I mean, the common thing is where you've got your boat. So you've got one knot that is there permanently, and that's what forms the ring. Through that knot, you will put like a long rope when you come into shore, and you'll pull it up and you'll tie it for as long as the boat's going to remain at the dock. But the knot itself that was permanent, that you never take off. That's something that is tied there. Same thing was true about the gamal. They would put a hole through the gamal's nose, and they would put this strong rope there, tie it, or maybe a thong, and they would tie it, and that would remain tied permanently. And then through that, they would put, when you get to the trading post and you get off your camel, and as you're looking around for somewhere to get a quarter to put into the parking meter, you would tie the camel up. And that was, of course, only until you got out of the store and galloped away, right? So that was very impermanent. And which one are we talking about? It's the Gemara. My Kesher HaJamalim or Kesher HaSapanim? I mean, are we talking about the Kitur Dekatre Bizimama or the Kitur Dekatre Biistrida? The Zimama was the permanent nose ring, and the Istrida was the permanent ship ring. And we tie a knot through that to keep the ship close to the dock, or to keep the camel close to the parking area. So why would I be chayav on that, midiraisa? I mean, that is for sure a kesher she'eino shekayama. I mean, I intend to untie it in order to be able to get the camel away from the parking lot or take the ship away from the dock. So why would I be chayav on something that is not meant to be permanent? And the Mishkan was certainly permanent. Therefore, the Mishnah must be referring to the knot that forms the Zamama, to the knot that forms the Istrida, which is the ring that goes through the ship, bro. Rabbi Meir says, any kesher that is not tight enough that I could still untie it with one hand, that's for sure not considered to be a kesher shekayoma. Moi revachtovoi, achoy demar acha. That's an interesting point, because you could have a very tight knot that would be nonetheless able to be untied with one hand. I'm talking about a bow. You can make a very tight bow, but it could still be untied by one hand, because that's the whole point of making it as a bow. You got that little piece sticking out, you just pull it, and the whole thing comes apart. So, I mean, what's the main point that Rabbi Meir is making? Is the main point, time of the Rabbi Meir, does it really have to do with the ease by which you can undo that knot? Well, if that's all that it is, then no matter how tight the bow would be, it would still be untied with the greatest of ease. Odilma, maybe the point is that Rabbi Meir is saying a knot that you can untie with one hand is not tight. And the time of the Rabbi Meir, that would be a normal knot, not a bow knot. So in time of the Rabbi Meir, the main point is that it's not tight, and a bow could be very tight. So what would be the din? Teku. We don't know. When it says we don't know, it means we don't know what Rabbi Meir holds. It doesn't mean we don't know what the halacha is, because later on, very soon, we're going to be getting to the case of a bucket and tying a rope on a bucket and stuff like that with a knot. I mean, with a bow versus a knot. There's no question that the Rabbanan allow tying a bow. The only question that we have over here, as Tosis explains, is whether those Rabbanan are Rabbi Meir or not. That's the question that we're adding. That indeed remains up in the air. And it gives us a perfect time to discuss the tying of knots with our very own sailor, who will know all about sailor knots, having taken a course for many months teaching him how to do the different kind of sailor knots. Big books that need to be studied over and over again, and that he certainly must have mastered perfectly, which is why we never can get that boat off of the dock. Going forward.
is wiped out. What can I say? I have trouble finding a bow in my shoe.
Gregorian S.
Now, there are some kind of nuts that you would not be chayev on, the way you would have been chayev for the Keshra Jamalim and the Keshra Sapanim. Okay, what does that mean? What does that mean? It means there are nuts that you're not chayev on, but that there are us, right? Then the Mishnah all of a sudden starts describing things that you could do even l'chatchila. Now, there's something wrong with the Mishnah. Obviously, we're going to have to explain this Mishnah as a kind of chisuri mechasra, because otherwise it contradicts itself in the very next second. There are some nuts that you won't be chayev on midiraisa. It can't mean. And for instance, a woman is allowed to tie the knot that keeps her blouse on. By the way, this is not a blouse that we're used to, but the miftach haluka actually had like a little button on one shoulder, another button on the other shoulder in the front, and you would tie the blouse from right side, wrap it around to make a knot on the left side, and the left side would wrap around the right side. It's currently not exactly all that fashionable, but you understand what we're talking about. And she could tie her hat on, chutei svacha, or she could tie her girdle on. Most of you don't even know what that is, right? But once upon a time, yes, so women wore girdles, believe it or not, b'chas v'shalom, to even suggest such a thing today. And ritzuot min al v'sandal, going to tie your shoelaces or whatever. You can do all of that, lechatchila, no dod yayin v'shemen, you want to tie up your canteen, so kedera shel boser, what they would do, we still have this kind of thing, it's very popular, which is like a little piece of plastic that has an elastic band around it, and you flip it, you put it around a pot, or you put it around a bowl, and it turns every bowl into a storage container. So they didn't have the elastic, maybe they didn't have the plastic, but they had our good old schnutzos that we've had before. And because of that, it's meant to be untied when you bring it to the table. I mean, that can't possibly be a kesher shel kayama, right? So all of those things you could do even lechatchila. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, you can even tie a rope in front of a barn or in front of the stall in the barn in order that the animal doesn't go out. Because, I mean, you're going to be taking that animal out constantly. It's got to be let out for whatever. So there's no problem in any of these cases. Well, how do you understand the Mishnah? The Mishnah contradicts itself. It starts off saying that there are some knots that you won't be chayev on the way you would be chayev for the camel knot or the sailor knot, which means that there's no chiev, but there certainly is an iser d'rabbanan, right? And then the very next words are, v'adatani, and v'chatchila, you can go ahead, and mikosheret isham miftach haluka, with a whole list of things that you can do, even lechatchila, what's happening? Says the Gemara Hachikam. Obviously, there's like a piece that you're going to have to insert over here. So the Mishnah is saying, look, the first Mishnah, the first part of the Mishnah that opened the Perek, that was talking about nuts that your mom's going to be chayev on. But there are other nuts that you're not chayev on. Umay nihu. So now you have to use your brains to figure out, okay, so what would those kind of nuts be? That would be the kind of knot that are implied in the discussion of the sailor knot and the camel knot. Because the sailor knot and the camel knot immediately brought to the fore the question, it was the first words of the Gemara, which camel knot, which sailor knot, right? Was it the Zimama knot, the Estrida knot, or was it the knot of the rope that you put through the Estrida and you put through the Zimama? That immediately set you thinking, okay, so which one are we talking about? Well, obviously, we got to be talking about the permanent one, right? Okay, so what would be the din about the impermanent one? Oh, that would not be a chi of the Arisa, continues the next mission. That would not be a chi of the Arisa, but it would still be Osir Drabonan, Chiyuva Hudaleka, but there is a Drabonan. So they're not meant to be permanent, but they are meant to be long term. What the din is of long term, by the way, Rashi says for a week or two, and that basically that's the way the Shulchan Aruch treats it. The Taz says no. Rashi's just saying that that's the reality of those knots. He's not saying that that's the definition of what's called long term. The definition of what's called long term, says the Taz, based on the analysis of the ones that are mutter versus the ones that are usher, are only knots that are meant to be untied during that same day. Which leads to the whole problem of when you do Galila on the Sefer Torah at Mincha, how to do Galila according to the Taz, because then you're going to be putting in a knot that you would be leaving in until Monday, right? So, okay, so because that you have to be, and that's how the Germans got the minhag of not even making any kind of knot. They just wrap around the ritzua and stuff. And people that are not used to that don't know what to do when they're faced with that German Sefer Torah. They have no idea what they're supposed to do with it. It's sometimes quite embarrassing. But
the wimple,
yeah. So that is basically a machlokas haposkim. Obviously, we're trying to be machmir, not like the Shulchan Aruch, to go according to the Taz. And so those would be chiyuvu deleka, ha'isura ika. You're supposed to put that into the Mishnah. But the Mishnah in this case really set you up so you understand what it's talking about by Dafka, by using the examples that it did, because then you had to split it into two different types of ideas right then and there when you read the first line of the opening Mishnah. And then the Mishnah wants to add, and by the way, there are even knots that you're allowed to do lechatchila. V'yeshubutar lechatchila. U'mayni okosheret biftechei chalukah. So those are all the kind of knots that basically are there during the day. I need to take off my shoes, or I need to take off my blouse, or I need to open up the water canteen, and so on and so forth. So I understand that those are things that don't even bear a resemblance to something that would be permanent in any way. Okay, Rabosai, that gives us a beautiful beginning to a whole new issue, and also a lovely closing to the question. Also introduced a very important new idea that I want to remind you about, to please put into your lists of munachim, and that's called ho'il. And this is a much broader description of the ho'il that we're used to, which was limited to a special din that had to do with yontav, where the Torah was matir something, which was letzarech, and therefore getting matir even shalol letzarech, as long as there's a tzarech miktsat. This is a much expanded concept that has application all over the place. So we introduced that idea over here through Rava, but the reality is that Rabbi Shimon's statement of we don't distinguish between usages is related to the same idea. In other words, we don't put classes of people in which this class can do something on Shabbos, this class can't do something on Shabbos, or at this time of the day you can do something on Shabbos, on that time of the day you can't do something on Shabbos. All of that may relate to the underlying idea of ho'il, so please put that down. And also remember that one of the fundamental issues of refuah, even though this is a broader term, it's kedai for you to remember the term mukha milta. Mukha milta means it seems to be completely clear from the act. And that was what we were ma'asering in refuah. Generally speaking, there was no iser of refuah where it's not mukha milta. Then we opened up our sugya today, talking about kesher shel kayama, and that's a musag. Kesher shel kayama, that's the only type of kesher that could possibly be mechayev you diuraita. And then we have aniva, which we're going to get to later, but at least we raised it today, which means a knot that is made that can be untied through a loop.